Nibbling my bottom lip, I touched the drawing again. This time, I tried imagining Art Row, as I would one of my landscapes, cobbling together the memories of a thousand mornings. It would be busy now, the area thick with local merchants and laborers and farmers and smiths beginning their daily business. In some of the buildings, just beyond my drawing, courtesans and restaurants would be opening their books for evening appointments. The pilgrims who'd prayed with the dawn would be giving way to minstrels singing for coins. I hummed a Yu'uv tune that had been a favorite of mine. Sweating stonemasons, distracted accountants, I heard their hurrying feet and tense breath and felt their purposeful energy. I was not aware of the change at first. The tree's scent had been thick around me since I'd been brought to the house of the risen sun. Slowly, subtly, it changed, becoming the fainter, more distant scent I was used to. Then that scent mingled with the smells of the promenade, horse shit and sewage and herbs and perfumes. I heard murmuring voices and dismissed them, but they were not coming from within the house. I did not notice the change at all, really, until the drawing opened up beneath my hands and I nearly fell into it. Startled, I yelped and stumbled back. Then I stared, blinked, leaned close and stared more. The cloth on the nearest row table, it moved. I could not see people, perhaps because I hadn't drawn any figures, but I could hear the gabble of a crowd in the distance, moving feet, rattling wheels. A breeze blew, tossing a few fallen tree leaves across the cobbles of the promenade, and my hair lifted off my neck just a little.
"Intriguing," said the Naipri behind me.
Yelping in shock, I tried to simultaneously jump to my feet and scoot away from the voice. Instead, I tripped over the rolled-up rug and went sprawling. While I struggled upright, grabbing for the bed to get my bearings, I realized too late that I had heard him enter and had dismissed it. He had been standing in the room, watching me, for quite some time. He came over, taking my hand and helping me to my feet. I snatched my hand away as soon as I could. Beyond him, I realized in dismay, the drawing had not only stopped being real, but also it had faded from view entirely, its magic gone.
"It takes great concentration to wield magic in a controlled fashion," he said. "Impressive, given that you've had no training, and you did it with nothing but food and candle wax. Truly amazing. Of course, it means we'll have to watch you eat from now on, and search your quarters regularly for anything bearing pigment."
Damn! I clenched my fist before I thought to stop myself.
"Why are you here?" I asked.
It came out far more belligerent than it should have, but I couldn't help it. I was too angry over my lost chance.
"I came, ironically, to ask you to demonstrate your magical abilities for me. I'm still a scrivener, even if I've left the order. Unique manifestations of inherited magic were my particular field of study."
He sat down in one of the room's chairs, oblivious to my seething fury.
"I should note, however, that if you meant to escape through that portal, your efforts would have ultimately been futile. The House of the Risen Sun is surrounded by a barrier that prevents magic from entering or leaving. A variation on my empty, actually."
He tapped the wooden floor with his foot.
"If you had tried passing through it via that portal, well, I'm not certain what would have happened, but you or your remains would not have gotten far."
Broken bowel, voices screaming. I felt ill and defeated. "It wasn't big enough to pass through anyway," I muttered, slumping onto the bed.
"True. With practice, however, and more paint, no doubt you could pass through these portals." That got my attention.
"What?"
"Your magic isn't that different from my own," he said.
And abruptly, I recalled the holes he'd used to capture me and Madding and the others.
"Both are variants on the scrivening technique that permits instantaneous transport through matter and distance via a gate, which is itself merely an approximation of the god's ability to traverse time and space at will. It seems that your gift expresses itself extroversely, however, while mine is introversive."
I groaned. "Pretend I haven't spent my life studying musty old scrolls full of made-up words."
My apologies. Let me try an analogy. Imagine that you hold a lump of gold in your hands. Gold is quite soft in its pure form. You can mold it with your fingers if you exert enough pressure. Then, It can become many things, coins, a bracelet, a cup to hold water. Yet gold isn't useful for every purpose. A sword made of gold would bend easily and be too heavy to wield. For that, a different metal, say, iron, is better. A rustle of cloth was my warning before Date took my hand. His fingers were dry, thick-skinned, calloused at the tips. He turned over my hand, exposing my own calluses from carving wood and clipping linven saplings, and also the stains from my makeshift paints. I did not pull away, though I wanted to. I did not like the feel of his hand.